Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Three Women, Three Ways. We are the show that tackles some pretty unusual topics, I think. They're unusual from the standpoint of you don't hear about them very much on radio. And we like to tackle those topics. We've talked with women who've served time in prison for killing abusers. We've talked with authors of new books on domestic violence issues. We've talked with sports figures. We've talked with all sorts of folks. And today we have a little bit different tactic, but one that is absolutely essential for us to learn about, and that is safety for kids. I mean, whenever you have kids, whenever you're around kids, you of course think about safety. But who's out there helping us? Who really keeps track of safety of children? Who do we go to if we have a concern? What do we really know about keeping kids safe? So today we are lucky to have Kathleen Clary Cook, who is the district of Benton Franklin County Health District in Seattle, Washington. I'm sounding a little awkward about that. But she is the health educator, injury prevention and community outreach for the Benton Franklin Health District here in Washington State. And she is part of the Safe Kids program, her organization, and that actually is a national program. Welcome to our show here, Kathleen.
Thank you, Heather. I'm so happy to be here.
Good. I'm glad to have you. You know, I think that I was thinking, Valentine's Day is coming up. You go everywhere in the stores, and there's the red hearts and the things, and I'm always such a sucker for those big tins of chocolates that are made out of metal, not necessarily the cardboard ones. Not because I want the chocolate, although that doesn't hurt, but because those hearts are so gorgeous, and we always think of Valentine's Day and hearts and love. But you know what? With those hearts and loves and candies and flowers come children, usually. And then we're in a whole different ball game. And I think for those of us who have kids, we realize that once you have kids, it's a whole different thing. And safety, not only your child, your own safety, that you want to be around for those kids, but also their safety. From the minute they're born, it's just, the door locks, the cupboard door locks, putting things up out of reach, everything is safety. And so we think about it a lot, Kathleen. So why do we need an organization that talks about kids' safety?
Well, the first thing that we have to understand is the number one killer of kids in this country under the age of 19 is injury.
Most people think
it's disease, it's injury. And if you think about injuries, the vast majority, virtually all injuries, are preventable.
Well,
so that's our starting point. 8,000 children a year die in this country to injury. 9 million others go to the emergency room every year. And as parents, caregivers, and adults in our communities, we can prevent almost all of these.
Okay. Can we prevent it short of wrapping them in bubble wrap?
We absolutely can, and I'm so glad you said that, because we do occasionally get those kinds of comments. And you know what? Kids are supposed to explore. That is how they learn, and we don't ever want to stop them from exploring and learning their way in the world, but there's some very basic common sense things we can do to keep them safe. So absolutely let them explore. Does that mean let them explore in your medicine cabinet and taste your prescription meds? No.
Or those cute little electrical outlets.
Right. Or, Let them ride in the car without a seatbelt. And I think one of the most frustrating things I can hear is people that say, well, when I was a kid, we did it this way, and we survived. Well, we survived,
but not everyone did.
I did, but I also, if you're just talking about cars, I wasn't in the car every day. And we didn't go on the highway every day. We went on the highway a couple times a year. My kids were on the highway every single day because that's how we get around now.
Lots of things are different.
Well, we no longer treat medical conditions with leeches and kerosene. It doesn't
kerosene.
Mean that those were better.
Oh, my God,
because
what did they use that for,
people
Kathleen?
Survive them.
You survive the treatment, you're good to go. Is that the deal?
Right, exactly.
Well, we were talking about this off air. I'm older than you are, and I don't remember treating anything with kerosene and leeches. Come on.
No, we didn't. But, back in our grandparents' or great-grandparents' day, those were treatments.
So. Okay. Kathleen, I'm a little negligent here in that we just jumped into our topic before I really let people know who you are. You actually have had a varied career. Tell us a little bit about what brought you to the work that you're doing right now.
Okay. I did. I kind of hopscotched my way to where I am. And I have to tell you, I absolutely love what I do. And every day I'm amazed that somebody pays me to do this.
So I
came out of college with a degree in mass communication. And I moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I had family, and I kind of bounced around, mostly doing advertising sales, but I worked in radio and cable television, a little bit in print media, and just wasn't totally satisfied with where I was, so I decided to go back to school to get an advanced degree, and because of what was available in Tulsa at the time, I kind of on a wild hair decided to go to law school. So I worked full-time. I went to law school at night, and I came out with a degree and spent a short amount of time, about a year, practicing communications law. And a couple of moves later ended up in Colorado, where I opened my own practice and started out, doing everything, divorces, dog bites, wills, small incorporations, and started taking court appointments to represent kids in abuse and neglect cases. And that really became my passion and something that I loved and I think I was pretty good at. And then a move for my husband took us to Ohio, of all places. And
we were talking about that off air, too. I grew up in Ohio. Come on.
Well, we were in Dayton, outside of Dayton. Oh, no. No, I loved it because it actually took me closer to my roots. So, and in Ohio, our second child was born. At that point, I actually decided to stay home. And I stayed home with my kids for the next 14 years. But I was always that mom, even when my oldest was born, who I used to think, I just never want to be that mom on the 6 o'clock news saying, I didn't know, if I had only known. And so I think one of the reasons they hired me is that when I came to my job interview, I said, I have always been just such a proponent of car seats and bike helmets. And I once emailed a car manufacturer because their commercial showed a kid getting in the front seat of their minivan. And I actually, this was long before anybody ever thought to pay me to do this, but I sent them an email and said, okay, what makes your van safe for kids in the front seat? And I never got a response, but interestingly, I never saw the ad again either. So I'm hoping that my voice contributed to that a little bit. So,
yeah,
it's kind of weird that I am a lawyer. I used to practice law. But for me, it's always been about keeping kids safe and healthy.
Yeah. Well, and was it that way before you had children? Because for me, it was just I had children later in life, and I guess not by today's standards. I was 30-ish when I had my kids, which back then, my oldest child is 30, and back then I was listed as an elderly prima gravida on my medical charts, which means an old first-time mother. that made me feel a little old, but the standards and everything that I had just so dramatically changed once I actually had a child. I didn't really give it a lot of thought until I had my own child. Was it that way for you, or were you more global than I was? did you think about child safety before you actually had your own children that you had to protect?
At that point, I think I was more into safety from a physical and emotional perspective, because I was working with kids who were being physically abused, sexually abused, and neglected. So I don't think I was quite as aware of personal safety in terms of, you know, putting the child-proof locks on the cabinets. I mean, we all kind of knew they were out there, and we knew we needed car seats. But I didn't have this passion for it until after my own kids were born.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think that that's a trigger for a lot of us. So you went from law to being kind of a citizen's advocate for child safety, and then how did you come into to Safe Kids organization?
I had been, a couple years ago, I started working part-time for a different program called Food Sense, where I was going into the low-income schools through Washington State University Extension and teaching kids how to make healthier food choices when they could. You know, you can't go into a classroom of kids for whom there isn't always food at home and tell them they have to eat fresh fruits and vegetables at every meal. You know, you have to meet them where they are. And it was a great program, but my kids are getting older, and I loved that job, but it was extremely part-time. And I put the word out among my friends that I was looking for another job, part-time to full-time. And about that time, a friend of a friend, a woman who works with Pasco Police Department here in Eastern Washington, was trying to convince a friend of mine to apply for a job here at the Benton Franklin Health District. And the Safe Kids Coalition here in Benton Franklin Counties was actually started 15 years ago. And the program was built up by two women here at the Health District, Annie Goodwin and Jerry Tyler, who over the years did phenomenal things with the program. Well, as things happen, over the years, a lot of the grant money went away and funding went away, and they were cut back to only being allowed to work on it, only being funded through their regular full-time jobs, a few hours a week. And about 2 years ago, they went to the administration here at the health district, because the health district is what we call a lead agency for Safe Kids. There's over 500 Safe Kids coalitions in the United States and partners in 25 other countries throughout the world. But the lead agency usually funds a certain amount of salary and time to work to promote the to act as coordinator for the coalition. So they went to the administration and they said, look, this program is down to autopilot and it's barely sustaining itself, and we either need to make a commitment or find a different lead agency. And our health district, thankfully, decided we want to commit to this program. We need to promote safety in our community. And they created a half-time position. So, like I said, I was put in touch with it, but a friend of a friend who is a very active member in the coalition, she actually tried to encourage my girlfriend to apply for it. And I applied for it and was very fortunate that they asked me to take on the role.
Mm-hmm. And that girlfriend, of course, still hates you. But
No.
Oh, okay.
She has three young kids of her own and asks me to check her car seats all the time.
Oh, good, good. You know, I've been negligent here in giving out our phone number. The topic that we have today is one that, you know, you might not have your own kids that you have to worry about safety anymore, but you have grandchildren, you have neighbors, you have relatives, you have friends with children, and I think that this is such an important topic. We kind of take it for granted a lot that kids are safe. Well, I mean, what do we need this for? We've got car seats. We've got bicycle helmets. We've got all of this other stuff. You know, I mean, what? Why do we need any of this stuff? So I think that you ought to give us a call I think you ought to give us a call, either telling us how you have kept children safe or what you observed about children's safety. Maybe you have questions about your own family and safety. And we're not talking just the bicycle helmets and the car seats, although that's a huge part of it. We're talking all aspects of child safety. Give us a phone call, 646-378-0430. 646-378-0430. Give us a call. You can talk to Kathleen. You can give us your comments. You can pitch in your 2 cents worth about this important topic of child safety. So, Kathleen, are we talking? I know we talked in our show prep about how bicycle or car seats are still a huge deal, which surprised me because I thought, well, gosh, car seats have been around for 4 years. You know, I mean, everybody knows about car seat safety, do they not? That, you know, you don't leave the hospital with a newborn without a car seat. Don't we all know all this stuff? Why is car seat safety still such an important factor that people need help with?
Well, the first thing is that of all the preventable injuries, of all the unintentional injury of kids, the number one cause of serious injury and deaths in this country is actually, of all kids, is motor vehicle crashes. Car seats, booster seats, seat belts go a very, very long way in preventing the vast majority of those. And yes, people know they have to have car seats, but somewhere between 75 and 90%, depending on what study you look at, seats are either being used incorrectly or not installed right. And the misuse rate is really, really high. And that's kind of frightening. We do car seat inspections every month with Safe Kids, and we put on car seat clinics, and I will tell you that we almost never see one that is 100% correct. There's a lot that are close, which is great.
Why is it so hard to do? I mean, I thought you just, okay, you buckled in the car seat, and then you buckled the kid into the car seat itself. I mean, how hard is that? Why is it not done correctly so many times?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to have the right car seat for the right child. They have to fit the seat. We want kids to stay rear-facing now until at least age 2. Because rear-facing is 5 times safer than forward-facing. And part of it is this is a constantly evolving science. And so what I knew with my kids 20 years ago with my oldest is not true today. At that point, they were telling us to keep them rear-facing at least till 6 months or a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people are very surprised to hear us saying now 2 years. Part of it is there's so many options with seats. There's different kinds of seats. There's different ways to install them in the vehicle. You have the latch system, which is your lower anchors and tether, or you have the seat belt. Many times we get seats in where people have used both, and there's like one brand of car seat that allows that, but the others don't. And so because it varies from seat to seat and vehicle to vehicle, there's just so many options out there that it can be tricky.
Yeah. So, but they come with instructions, right?
I mean, they do. And so the first thing you want parents to do
like
is
assembly that you have to have a PhD in that particular topic in order to figure them out, or
No, because there's very few seats that you actually have to put together. There's a couple of booster seats where you put the back onto the booster, but for the most part, a seat's going to come fully assembled. And if you take the time, read through the manual, and look at the owner's manual of your vehicle. That's an important piece that most people don't do.
Oh,
but in
I wouldn't have done that.
Right? In every car manual, vehicle owner's manual, there's a section on child restraints. And you want to pull that out and look at it. I personally drive a vehicle where, now I don't need child restraints in my car because my kids are teenagers and in their 20s. But
oh, no, that's when you really need them. That's what.
Well,
for a different reason.
We need different. We need different, yeah. But you can't actually put 2 car seats side by side in the back seat of my car if one's behind the driver. I had no clue. I would have thought 3 across is perfectly viable. But I didn't look at that because, as I said, I don't need car seats in my car at this point. And so you need to look at both the manual of the car seat and the vehicle itself.
The car. Yeah.
Right.
Wow. And I never, you know, I mean, I think in all the years that I did car seats and booster seats, it never even occurred to me to read the car manual.
Right. Lots of good information in there.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So this sounds like, you know, the Christmas morning assembling the bicycle kind of thing. I mean, some people are really good at that kind of stuff and some people are not. Can people go somewhere for help? I mean, if you come home from the hospital or, you know, can you go to used to be you could go to the fire department and they would check to see if your car seat was installed correctly. Are there still things like that out there?
There are. So we have certified child passenger safety technicians, of which I am one. And
okay.
It used to be that a lot of fire departments had their firefighters go through the training. That's not the case anymore. The training has gotten a lot more time-consuming, and recertification takes a little more time and energy. So some fire departments do still have certified child passenger safety technicians on staff. Some hospitals do. If you go to safekids.org, there is a menu down at the bottom that says Staying Safe. And under that, it says Get Your Car Seat Checked. And if you click on that, you can find a local event or inspection station. Here in Benton and Franklin counties in eastern Washington, we do them once a month. Some places do them once a week.
Okay.
And if that doesn't
we're talking about your particular area, but this is an organization. This is universal, the information you're giving out.
It's
going to safekids.org.
Nationwide, and you can find a car seat inspection station in your area, or if you can't, if you click on find a technician, they will find someone in your area. And if you have a local Safe Kids Coalition, which, again, you can find through safekids.org, they will get you to a place where you can get your car seat checked. And you really want to make sure that the person who's doing it is a currently certified car seat technician, because there's lots of people out there who have really great intentions, but they aren't adequately trained.
Okay. So, you know, Grandpa might have been really, really good mechanically, but that doesn't necessarily mean he knows the ins and outs of the car seat installation and safety. I mean, I know people that can look at mechanical things and go, oh, yeah, this goes here, and boom, you're done. But probably not the best plan for installing your child's car seat, huh?
Well, exactly. The best thing, especially if you're expecting, try not to wait until 2 or 3 days before your due date. Put the car seat in a few.
I'm sorry. Okay. Darn. Are you sure?
Yeah. Go ahead and a month or two before the baby arrives, find yourself a car seat clinic or a fit site or a local technician. Make an appointment and have them walk you through installing the seat. Almost all of us have training dolls, or even, you know, plastic dolls from the store where we can show you how to harness correctly. And we have the parents practice. Because, you know, the closer you get to that due date, or even after, the more stressed out and exhausted you are, and it's hard to retain all this information.
Well, plus, you need to make those things routine so that you don't have to think about them when the time comes.
Right.
I remember that. I remember my husband and I, you know, taking the baby, going, okay, put it here. No, you put it over here. Go over here, you know. And this poor baby is sitting there waiting for us to try to figure out how to strap him in.
Mm-hmm.
you know, probably not the best approach. You know, have it routine. Do it before you actually have the child to contend with, so that it's second nature for you. Because once you have the child to contend with, trust me, it's a whole different ball game. You know, I mean, you think of all the people who leave the car seat, you know, the baby in the car seat on the curb or something, and you think, what horrible people. But you know, you go through those first couple months, and as you said, you're so exhausted and everything that, you know, you kind of go, don't let me do that one. Please don't let me do that one.
Right. I can remember driving down the road and having to stop and make sure that I had put the baby in the car. And I had,
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, I honestly could not remember at that moment whether I had done it or not.
I remember my first outing after with the newborn baby, and we went to lunch, my husband and I, and we're talking, we're yakking away. He parks the car, and I get out of the car. He gets out of the car. He comes over to my side of the car and starts walking to the restaurant, and I looked at him and went, "The baby!" It's like, the baby, yes, okay. I mean, you do stupid things like that just because of fatigue and shock and learning the whole new thing. And, you know, so make the car seat something that you do right away. And it's just second nature. You don't have to be thinking about that when you bring home the baby. And the same thing, you know, for grandparents. Gosh, grandparents, you're going to be, you know, helping out with that baby. You're going to be helping them, you know, go here, there, and everywhere. And you want to know how that works, that car seat works, so that you really are being helpful and not just, you know, jumping
right.
in
and
there.
Nobody
with
nobody is.
Yeah.
And nobody's saying that if you didn't know or that, you know, like I said, we grew up without seatbelts, without car seats, and I remember when they started putting seatbelts in the backs of cars, they were optional equipment. And
yes.
I can remember when we actually kind of started wearing seatbelts. And even then on long trips, you know, somebody would sleep in the back end of the station wagon. We're not saying anybody is a bad parent or a bad grandparent or a bad caregiver. Things just change. When we know better, we do better. And so I think people just get defensive. None of us want to hear that we're doing it wrong. And so I know at our check sites, and I think, you know, throughout the country, the first thing we try and do is tell people that what they're doing right. And sometimes what they're doing right is that they came for help, because what we see in their car is terrifying, you know, that the seat's not secured or what, you know. But we
and
we
I'm
don't
assuming
wanna,
that
don't,
these things are no this kind of help is no cost, right?
In most places, it is free. There are a few people who charge for it, which is not to say it's a bad thing. Having your car seat checked normally takes about a half hour per car seat. We do have volunteers in our local community who will do it at no charge. They will sometimes accept a gratuity if someone wants to give them a thank you to help pay for their gas or their time. But there are, the vast majority of car seat inspections are free.
Okay. For the places that do charge, what's the range that they charge? I mean, are we looking at $100? Are we looking at $10? Or
I would, off the top of my head, I would have to guess somewhere between, for the most part, 25 on up. I know there's, you know, people who will spend a great deal of time, almost what we call a car seat concierge service, where they will even work with you and help you select the right car seat for your car and your children.
Oh, wow.
So it's going to
I want to go back to that. You talked about the right seat for the right child. I mean, babies are babies, aren't they? I mean, it's not like you have to fit a pair of jeans on them. I mean, what makes it different, you know, the need different for this child's car seat versus that child's car seat?
Okay, so the best car seat is the one that fits your child, fits your vehicle, and that you use every single time. So if we're just talking about infants, okay, we want to keep them rear-facing, at least to age 2, and there's two types of rear-facing seats. So the first one is what we call a rear-facing only. That's the one that has the handle and the base that usually stays in the car. Sometimes you can use it without a base. Or there is a convertible seat, and that's a seat that's just going to stay in the car. And it's convertible because after a certain weight or height, it will turn and become a forward-facing seat also.
Okay.
So our rear-facing only seats, most of them only go up to about 30 pounds in weight. And most babies are going to outgrow those. Or you're going to get to a point where trying to lug around a baby in a car seat with one hand, you know, even if the baby's only 18 pounds, you know, trying to lug around that 20 to 25 pound.
Okay. So you're talking about those car, I always call them the I always call them the baby totes. You're talking about the ones where you somehow or other the car seat itself unclicks from the base, and then they can put it on a stroller, or they can put a handle on it and carry them like a basket.
Right. Well, the handle is built into it.
Okay. But, all right.
And so the correct term for that is actually a rear facing only seat. Some people, I think, we used to call them infant seats.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I don't like those. My daughter and I had this big argument about them, and I said, you know, I mean, when do you, you know, I mean, you strap the kid in that plastic basket, and then you snap them into the car seat, then you snap them into the stroller, then you snap the hand, you know, carry them like a bushel basket. When do you have this child next to you? So you're hugging them and holding them and carrying them. And she went, oh, for heaven's sake, mother, blah, 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 it's convenient. And, you know, okay, fine. I don't know. To me, I mean, I had babies in the snuggly generation, you know, where you kept them strapped to you as much as possible. But, yeah, so you're talking about that kind of seat, which is just kind of like put the baby in there in the morning and don't have to take him out until nighttime.
But we don't want babies to stay in there all day. They really are intended only for using in the car. And one of the biggest misuse things I see is you should never put one of those up on the seat of a grocery cart.
Oh,
and
I've seen that.
Oh, you see it all the time. And now that I mentioned it, you're going to see it every time you go to the store. They are not safe up there for a couple of reasons. One, they're very top-heavy. And there have been many, many instances of the child in the seat together toppling off the grocery cart. The other that happens is that sometimes the mechanism that locks that seat into its base will lock onto the grocery cart. And that can damage the mechanism of your seat, and you will not know that your seat has been damaged, and you'll continue to use it when, if you are then in a crash, right? It won't stay secured to the base. So, if you must keep the baby in the carrier, and I realize it's convenient, especially my kids were very happy to be in their car seats in the car and on airplanes. I had the best behaved kids on airplanes. People used to freak out when they saw me and three kids getting on that flight.
Oh, yeah.
The car seat. And they got right in their car seats, and they went to sleep. They were, you know, they were very, very comfortable in them. Do not leave the baby in the car seat in the house. It's not at the right recline angle, and there are too many instances of babies actually, like if parents have undone part of the straps, the harness, of the baby sliding down, we call it submarining, and suffocating.
Ooh.
So car seats are intended to be used in the car and some on airplanes, and that's when they should be used. And the rest of the time, absolutely hold your baby. There are all kinds of really great wraps and things out there. And, you know,
so
I had
really
two kids.
It's not designed to just kind of pop your baby in there in the morning, and then you don't have to take him out until night.
Absolutely.
Even
you do
though
not
I see
want
people
do
doing
that.
Yeah. Okay.
I had kids.
Now,
my two younger ones were 22 months apart. I totally understand exhaustion and convenience, and how hard it is to do anything with babies and kids.
Okay. Kathleen, if I see that woman in that grocery store, here we go. I'm holding back a sneeze, so I'm going to sound funny for a minute. How do you tell her that maybe that's not the best way to be using her car seat on the shopping cart?
A lot of people try, and for the most part, we are, bless you, we are greeted with, people get very defensive and very angry. So most of us do not approach people and just say, you know, don't do this. Because again, people, you know, parents, as parents, people are telling us, we get so many messages and we're being told we're doing so many things wrong. And really it's about educating and supporting parents, but helping them to understand what the safest thing is. Car seats at one point were designed to go on shopping carts. That's part of why we do it. And, but again, these things, they change. And the more we know, the smarter we are, the better educated we are, the better we do. I've actually only done it one time, but it was a mom who looked very confused looking at car seats and travel systems. And I finally spoke up and said, I'm a certified tech. Do you have questions? Can I help you with anything? And we started talking about what she was looking for. And at that point, I was able to share, you know, I didn't know this before, and I'm sure you don't, but did you know that actually they're not safe up there on that seat of the shopping cart? And that was well received, but I think it was because we had already started talking. You know, if you look at a shopping cart, the warning labels on the shopping cart tell you not to do that. And a lot of stores have signs when you walk in saying, please don't put the babies up, put those rear-facing only car seats up on the seat of the shopping cart. And
really?
And they just get ignored. Uh-huh.
Well, yeah,
you
because
so
you're worried about getting the groceries, you're worried about getting the kid back home for a nap, you're worried about what the brother and sister are grabbing off the shelf. You know, I mean, I understand that.
Right. You're
completely.
You're just trying to get in and out of that store in a reasonable amount of time and hopefully getting home with everything you meant to buy.
Yeah, yeah, before somebody has a meltdown.
Exactly.
You or the children. gosh, you know, it's so complicated. I think of my mother who had babies without even thinking about it and, you know, was always upset. Her whole life she was upset because she had a beautiful necklace with wooden beads on it that she gave my baby sister to play with to keep her quiet, and my sister broke them. And I'm thinking, beads, you gave her wooden beads.
Right.
You know? But for my mother, it was like, you know, a no-brainer. You just did what you wanted and, you know, kept the kid happy, and that was that. You know, safety, who cares, you know? Kids are resilient. Kids are.
We all go through that it will be okay this one time, or it won't happen to me. We recently did a safety campaign here designed at educating people that kids under the age of 13 need to stay in the back seat. And I was doing this at an elementary school, and we had a local TV station there. And in fact, the first day, all we were doing was counting. We had to get a count of how many elementary school kids are coming out of the front seat of the car, because we know if they're in elementary school, they're under 13. And here in Washington State, it's actually a state law that kids under 13 have to be in the back seat as long as it is practical. There's a seat available. And a friend of mine pulled up with her son in the front seat of an otherwise empty Suburban. And she looked at me and said, but it's only a block from my house to the school.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, there's not a magic safety bubble. It's not just across the parking lot or around the block. There's not a magic safety bubble anywhere that crashes aren't going to happen there.
Yeah.
And you might have
you
noticed,
crash
I don't call them
your driveway.
I don't call, we don't call them accidents because, again, almost all of them are preventable, and that's why we call them crashes or collisions.
Ooh, you know, I used to tell my kids when they were little, I used to say, we call them accidents for a reason. We don't call them on purposes.
Right. But there's a difference between accident and unintentional.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. Huh. Okay, so, I've got to say, for somebody who doesn't have grandkids, who doesn't have infants anymore, doesn't have, you know, I am absolutely fascinated by all this. I mean, who knew? Who knew?
Well, when you and I talked before the show, I told you we could do at least an hour just talking about car seats. And really,
I know,
we haven't even moved, practically
have. You know what?
Let's
move on from the car seats. If you have children that are car seat age, if you have a niece, a nephew, a grandchild, a cousin, a sister, brother, blah, 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 give them the webpage, safekids.org, and just kind of let them know that, you know, gosh, you heard this program, and apparently car seat issues are huge. I mean, it's really a complicated thing, and so learn about it. And make sure that those folks get the information that they need. But let's talk about other things, okay, because our time goes so quickly. We are talking about car accidents a lot, but what other things happen around the home? I remember having a crawling infant, and my husband was supposed to be watching the infant crawling at his feet, basically, as he was watching some TV or reading the paper or something, you know. And I was out in the kitchen doing what people do, and I glanced in, and my son was crawling, just hell-bent for leather, toward an electrical outlet. And his father didn't even notice it. Because the kid was just playing on the floor, you know, and I kept watching that, and finally I thought, oh my God, the kid actually is going for that outlet. You can kind of see that expression on their faces, like, ooh, what is that, you know?
When I lick my finger and stick it right in there?
Exactly. Now, it had an outlet cover on it, of course, but, you can't cover all outlets, or a lot of times we miss an outlet or so. And I remember thinking, what would have happened if I hadn't happened to glance in there? I mean, it never crossed my mind, you know? I was just absolutely floored at, despite all the preparation, despite all of the safety measures, here's this kid finding a vulnerable spot and just heading straight for it as if, you know, neon were lighting his way. What other kinds of things happen with kids around the house that we don't even think about too much?
TV and furniture tip-overs.
Mm.
A TV, we lose a child to a TV tip-over every 2 to 3 weeks in this country. I'm not. And it's so sad because it is 100% preventable. TVs are big. They're heavy. And we put them up. There's a $5 strap where you can secure that television to the wall.
Yeah.
And that will totally prevent. But what happens so many times is we don't want the kid to get to the TV, so we put it up high. Well, what do children do? They climb. Right?
Yes,
or they want
they
the remote.
Do.
What did you do with the remote so they wouldn't play with it? You put it on top of the television set.
Yeah.
Or you got a new television set.
Mm-hmm.
You got a new television set for the big game tomorrow. Go Seahawks. And had to get that in. And so what did you just do with the old one? Well, you decided you'd put it in the playroom or the family room. But most of us aren't going to go buy a new piece of furniture for it. I wouldn't. And so you have an old dresser or something, and you put it up on that. And those, especially the big old cathode ray TVs, are extremely heavy.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
a television falling on a child or a baby is like dropping them off a 10-story building.
Oh, my gosh.
I
never, ever would have even thought of that. Wouldn't have thought
exactly,
of that.
Exactly. But... And sometimes we hear that people, they don't want to use the strap because they're afraid they're going to damage their wall or their television.
Oh, please.
Same thing with car seats. They're worried about them damaging their leather seats. Stop and think for a minute, what is the most important thing here?
Yeah, exactly. And what can be replaced, what cannot?
Right. What can be fixed with a little spackle? Not
mm-hmm.
your child.
And it's a hint, it's not the child. Trust me, I've tried it. Spackle does nothing to fix children. Nothing.
You know, and that's not to say that I haven't spent my own share of quality time in the emergency room with kids. I have.
Mm-hmm.
You
we
know,
all
nobody,
have.
nobody is a perfect parent. We have to strive to be the best parent we can be, and sometimes that's just being a good enough parent.
Yeah.
But stopping to
but
think.
But it's certainly not a protection. I mean, it's all you're doing is chipping away at the likelihood something's going to happen. You're not really ensuring that nothing's going to happen to your child. You're just, you know, making it less likely
but
that something's going to.
Right. There's some real simple things. We always say supervise with your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your eyes on that child. You know, kids between age 1 and 2, most of them die by drowning. And that's not necessarily drowning in a pool or a body of water. Sometimes it's a toilet or a bucket.
Oh, yeah.
And it's as simple as keeping the door to the bathroom closed.
Yeah.
And keeping your eyes on that child. I mean, it's no parent should have to endure the heartbreak of A, losing a child, and B, losing a child to something they could have prevented. That's what we want to prevent. We're not trying to tell people they're doing a bad job or that they're bad parents. They're not. I know these people love their kids, and I know that they would be beyond devastated if something happened to one of their children. So,
yeah.
You know, we hope people stop and realize we're just trying to help you know the things that other people didn't know and had to find out the hardest way possible because a child was injured or worse.
Yeah. I know the year that my youngest child was figured out, she was a year old and she figured out not only how to walk but how to get out of the crib. And that, I must tell you, I mean, I tell people this story and they start laughing. It's not funny. I mean, I thought, here I have a child with absolutely no sense whatsoever and total mobility. I didn't sleep for years, you know, because, you know, and that same winter, a little child, I think it was in Idaho or Iowa or one of those colder states, had gotten up in the middle of the night, moved a chair over to the door, figured out how to unlock the door, walked out in the middle of a cornfield and froze to death.
Mm.
And that was exactly the same time my one-year-old learned how to, you know, get out of her crib and walk around. I didn't sleep. I was terrified for this child. I mean, I literally went for like 2 or 3 years without sleeping, worrying about these kids. And every time I'd hear a little noise, I'd pop awake and, you know, look around and everything. But the idea that there was this, you know, I went to my pediatrician and I said, okay, I've got it figured out. If I go buy that real soft nylon netting that they have at the fabric store and I just tack that on top of the crib, and he laughed. He thought I was making a joke. I was not making a joke. I was trying to figure out some way to keep this kid safe. You know, and if I could just confine her to that crib, and I told him, I said, I've tried it. I can plunge my hands right through that nylon netting if something happens, if it's an emergency, you know. I mean, I had it all figured out, but I could never do it because everybody acted like I was, you know, nailing her inside a coffin or something. But I just thought, I have to keep this child safe. How can I keep this child safe when I have, you know, such limited control? Do you find things like that that people deal with, or am I just some sort of weird anomaly?
No, because I think kids are way smarter and than we ever think. They are persistent. They will keep trying something. And, again, that's how they learn and grow is to explore, and they explore with what they have, which is their bodies and their hands. And kids are impulsive. I wish I had understood this. I think I would have been a better mother when my kids were toddlers, that I know they're smart, and I know when I tell them, you know, don't put that in your mouth, or, you know, don't do this, that they know what I'm saying, and I turn around, and by golly, they're doing it. And it's not that they don't stop to think, ooh, this will make mom mad. They're very impulsive, and they don't stop to think what's going to happen if I do this. And so it's our job as adults to not put the stuff in their environment. One of the biggest things we're seeing right now in Washington State is kids getting into marijuana edibles because it's legal here. Even more terrifying is the liquid nicotine for the e-cigarettes. There was a little boy that was an 11-month-old.
That is real nicotine? I thought it was just steam. That really is nicotine in there?
It is really nicotine. And nicotine is fatal to children. It takes only two teaspoons to kill a 65-pound child. And here's the scarier thing. Nicotine doesn't have to go into the mouth to make it into the body. Think of nicotine patches.
Of course.
And if it goes through, nicotine is transdermal, so if it goes through the skin, it's not even being filtered at all by the kidneys and the liver. And I am not a medical person, and I just read this, so I'm throwing that out there. Maybe it's not the liver that filters, but the kidneys. There was a little boy in New York in December that just died. And the liquid nicotine, because it's not regulated yet, they are selling it in fruit flavors with bottles that have cartoons on them. And, you know, that's appealing to a child.
Of course it is.
It looks yummy.
Oh,
and one swallow, right.
Oh, that just makes me sick. That just makes me sick. These poor kids. You know, what we're exposing them to. I think that, I mean, you just opened my eyes. I mean, I didn't even realize that stuff had actual nicotine in it. I've never been around anyone who used it, but I thought it was just steam. I thought it was, that's how stupid I am. I thought that it was just the motion. I didn't realize it was a way to ingest nicotine.
Yes.
Yuck, and everybody, I suspect that a lot of people think that those things must be so much safer than an actual cigarette. When you mentioned the marijuana products, which, I mean, I can only imagine the devastation that would provide to a child. What other things do we just kind of not think about as adults that we lay around or leave laying around that are really, really harmful to kids?
Our prescription drugs, our over-the-counter drugs, you know, and this is where we had a recent situation in my area of a child who ended up in a coma because a relative, my understanding is, a relative came to visit with prescription in her purse. And put it down, was visiting with mom or dad or whatever, and the child got into the purse. And, you know, don't assume that because it's in a childproof container that it's actually childproof. A childproof
that's
container.
Only childproof. That only works with us.
right.
Yeah.
It slows them down. It doesn't stop them.
Yeah.
It, you know, and I think every parent out there has a story of their child defeating some childproof measure.
Yeah.
Other basics. Go ahead.
I had a friend whose child got into her bathroom cabinet. Now, she felt she was safe there because there was no medication, you know, so she had all of her medication locked up. This was just her regular linen closet with the towels and stuff, but she kept her diaphragm there, her birth control diaphragm there. And the child got into that and, you know, I mean, it's just, you just can't imagine what they will find fascinating. And the things that we don't think of. I mean, I think most of us realize that, you know, the household cleaners, the pills, that, you know, you want to keep those away from me. But they think of things that can be harmful that we don't even know the things that they're going to think of.
Right. And the other thing with, you know, household toxins, a lot of products look alike. Stop and think of a shaker of grated Parmesan cheese in the green foil can and a can of Comet.
Ooh.
You don't read. They're both on the kitchen counter. They both have powder that shakes out of them. One's really delicious. Okay? And we actually... not to keep harping on Washington, but Washington State Poison Control, they have what we call yuck boxes throughout the state where we actually put together a demonstration where that people can borrow. And poison controls may have this in other states. Icing in a tube looks just like spackle. And so there's stuff that kids, that you wouldn't think twice necessarily about leaving out on your counter for even a short amount of time, that looks to a child like something they would normally eat.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And the other thing is, don't think that because you put it up high that they won't get to it. Kids will climb. So out of sight as well as out of reach and locked up is really important.
What I did with my kids, of course, I had one child that was on a lot of meds. He was very sickly for a number of years. But I just converted, forget the medicine cabinet. I converted my linen closet. I just put a great big lock on my linen closet and, you know, everything in there. Yeah, the towels were locked up, but so was everything even remotely related to that bathroom. And the other bathroom, you know, it was just all, the entire cupboard was just locked up, for years. I think my child was 10 years old before I left it unlocked, because it's just so.
I heard a great idea recently, which is that you put the Mr. Yuck stickers on everything, but instead of telling the child you don't touch this, you tell them, if you show me, don't touch it, but if you come tell me that you see something with one of these stickers, I will give you a prize of some kind.
Oh, wow.
And that way, instead of saying, bring it to me or don't touch it, they're getting a reward for finding the Mr. Yuck sticker and showing it to you.
Huh. But then will that make them understand that what Mr. Yuck is, that Mr. Yuck is there so that the child doesn't get into it?
Well, yeah, and obviously that's something you need to go over. But again, that there's that impetuous impulsivity of kids. So if you tie it to, because most of us would have said, oh, if you see this, don't touch it. But if you say, if you tell me when you see one of these, I will give you a reward, whether that's, a piggyback ride or a sticker. You know, it doesn't have to be food. It doesn't have to be candy. But whatever works, 10 extra minutes to stay up at bedtime, depending on how old the child is. Whatever works in your house. And I thought that was a great idea and probably more effective for a lot of kids than just, if you see this, don't touch it.
Yeah. Well, and I think you have to judge your child as well. I mean, I know as a child, if somebody told me no, that meant big red flag, yes. Apparently I was always that way. If you told me, okay, that's there so you don't touch it, I would touch it. I mean, that was just, that's how I was. I had a child where if you said, oh, that's a no-no, boom, she stayed away forever and ever, and that was it. So you have to kind of judge that child, too. We're running out of time so rapidly. We've only got a couple minutes left, but there's a question that's just been burning in me since we started this, and that is, how old is a child before you can trust them to cross the street alone?
Most people say age 10.
Uh-huh.
Most of the experts say that until they are at least 10, they should not cross the street without an adult.
Yeah.
Because, again, as many times as you teach them to look, they don't have good judgment. And that's not to say that kids aren't smart, because they are, and that they're not responsible, but they're kids.
Yeah.
And their job is to be a kid, and our job is to keep them safe.
Yeah, I think you're right. I that's been one of my pet peeves. I held my kids' hands until they were, well past the age. And some of my friends, you have 4 or 5-year-old kids that they're allowing to, walk down the sidewalk on their own, 10 or 12 feet in front of them. And I would just, I could never do that. I thought, you never know when this starts. I always wanted to either have my hand on my child in a place like that, or be within a foot or two of them.
Right. Parking lot.
And a lot of my friends thought I was just such an overprotective mother. It was just pathetic. I've learned so much, and like I said before, Kathleen, I find it fascinating, actually, that I have enjoyed this conversation because I just learned so much. I would love to do this conversation again with you sometime. Meanwhile, I always end our show with a quote, and I had a really funny one, but I have to tell you that I hit a wrong button on my computer and my funny quote went away. So if I find it, I'll give it to you next week. I will give you a different quote that I think is really important. This is from Princess Diana. Hugs can do a great amount of good, especially for children. And I think that when we're talking child safety, we have to look at the practical stuff, but we also have to look at the love, the affection that you have for your children, and let that show through how safe you keep them. Thank you for joining us, Kathleen. Come join us again next week, and we are Three Women, Three Ways.